Okay, so I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Naomi Wolf. She's come here a couple of occasions to ArcLight. We love her to death. And she's the co-founder of The Daily Clout, author of 8 New York Times bestsellers, and she'd like to talk about the challenging times regarding politics these days. Welcome, Naomi Wolf.
Thank you all so much for so many reasons. Thank you for being here. Thank you for giving money to ArcLight. I'm sorry to start out, you know, with the material plane, but we are in a time of tremendous darkness in which the forces of darkness have tremendous resources. I think it's prescient that the founder of ArcLight, the builder of ArcLight, knew that we would need an arc of light, and we have to get through this time, and it does take resources to do that. So that's why I'm especially honored and happy to be here for a fundraiser, because it's recognizing that this is how we build, in addition to morale, in addition to love, in addition to community. I also want to thank you because you saved my emotional life, in a way. I only visited once or twice in the depth of winter of 2020, but that was when the global freakout was at its most psychotic. And, you know, I, at that point, was with my husband, a wonderful, very talkative Irishman, and an elderly dog in the middle of the woods in Columbia County. And I was being told that the world would kind of never be one of humanity and fellowship and households beyond our own. And while everyone was being propagandized in my former social circle in the liberal elite enclaves of New York City and Washington and the West Coast and so on, I came here once or twice, and it was like Alice in Wonderland, you know, stepping through the looking glass, and it's like, oh my God, here are children and dogs and vegan tofu casseroles and, you know, people are singing and they're hugging each other and they're fine. And that, you know, it was like the scales falling from my eyes. And I remember thinking, you know, thank God, if I didn't see this with my own eyes, I wouldn't know it was possible. Some of you are also kind of notorious in my personal history because I was so angry in the depth of that winter that my governor was saying more than 6 people could not gather, and that's so un-American and unconstitutional that I sent out a call and my synagogue wasn't open, right? And I just said, like, someone come over. You know, I think I said it on Twitter. And an old friend contacted me, and then a bunch of strangers at my invitation showed up at my house for a potluck. It was like a renegade, you know, dissident potluck. They were all lovely, but also, and I put it on social media because I wanted to show, you know what, fuck you. You know, we're gonna gather in New York State. You are not gonna take our First Amendment rights to assemble away from us by fiat. It was a lovely, lovely evening, but it also, in the circles I used to inhabit, was like this, oh, you know, you did what? You know? But again, it kind of saved my life because it was a thread back to what I remembered of human community. And the last thing I want to say is I grew up in the Haight-Ashbury. I'm the child of, you know, 3 generations of hippies and proto-hippies and, you know, post-bohemians and radicals from the old country. So when I walked into ArcLight, I thought, oh, here they are, you know, my people. So thank you. Thank you for welcoming me and my family. I do want to take the time that I have with you tonight to kind of, you know, have a really serious conversation with you about some more tough things that have to be recognized and dealt with on the political plane. So I want your permission to go ahead and kind of take you out of the warm, fuzzy moment and into the we're fighting a battle moment, and this is what's required from my point of view. Do I have the okay to do that? Thank you. All right. So it's, some of you know my work. 12 years ago, I wrote a book called The End of America, which predicted that all this would happen if we let it, and it did. And in that book, I pointed out that there is a game plan that tyrants use. It's well-developed. Tyrants on the left use it. Tyrants on the right use it. It involves doing 10 things, taking 10 steps, and by the end of those 10 steps, you've closed down a democracy. You've crushed an open society. And that's where we are now. We're at step 10. We're in step 10. Many people don't know this. I didn't know it till a state legislator told me, but 47 states are currently have emergency law. And our own state of emergency in the state of New York has been extended again and again, this time for, you know, medical reasons, nonsensical. But this is the definition of step 10. It's not, our democratic rights, our legislative processes are not intact in 47 states in this country. And around the world, it's even worse. Pardon me. We're struggling here in the United States in ways I'll get into more detail about. In Australia, people are beaten when they leave their homes. Austria just announced that they were shutting all unvaccinated people into their homes, and now there's a nationwide lockdown again. Ireland was just told they have a curfew at midnight, so the dark days of tyranny are not behind us globally. So what I want to tell you is that we're in a war. It's a new kind of war. Excuse me. And I think Kat kind of gestured at this. I know Mark Crispin Miller will speak to it. Kevin also speaks to it, Kevin Jenkins. In different ways, we're kind of all describing the same phenomenon. But basically, our enemies have figured out how to wage war upon us without, it's not a shooting war. My husband's a veteran, and they refer to shooting wars, and then they refer to classical Cold War subversion and tenderization of the enemy. And it's the latter that we're being attacked by. So rather than a shooting war, which is really kind of wasteful, costs a lot of money, you sacrifice your people, we're in a war which, in the School for the Americas, they teach Americans to do this to countries overseas, and karma's a bitch. I'm not saying we deserve it, but the same techniques of subverting other democracies, taking the leaders off the chessboard, creating an environment where you can't tell truth from lies, propagandizing the population, creating punishments, suppressing the rule of law, now that's happening to us, and it's happening to people around the world. The war is against the West, and the war is against democratic open societies and the rule of law. And it's through what the CCP calls asymmetrical warfare, where, again, no shots are fired, but our institutions are being subverted and dissolved. Our cultural norms are being subverted and dissolved. Our right to touch each other, and I'll get to that, is being destroyed by fiat. And I have a theory about why this is happening, and I'll speak to it if you want me to. So I've mentioned China, and my husband, who's a detective and a former military intelligence for many years, he's been following the money. And there's billions flowing from the CCP, you know, in alliance with entities like the World Economic Forum, One Health, EcoHealth Alliance, One Health Alliance, these creepy for-profits, to basically kind of dissolve and undermine our institutions and our culture. And I won't get into too much detail about that, because it's just illustrative, but in addition to those bad actors, you have the double digits billions being amassed because of these psychotic, like medically psychotic policies of the pandemic, right? The pandemic, now endemic. I don't mean it wasn't real, but it's now not even in the top 10 causes of death when you map the numbers against causes of death in a state, which is the only way to actually do the math if you're not engaging in innumeracy, which is what we're being asked to engage in. And those policies like distance learning for children who are not at risk, like not letting retailers, small businesses keep their doors open, right? Who does it benefit? big tech, of course, is making an absolute killing from these psychotic policies. So you see, you know, Amazon, triple-digit billion rise in profits, three digits billions, right? You see Zoom, you see Google, you see Facebook, you see educational tech in the billions and billions of dollars. So why, I have a weird bio. I don't know a lot of people with this bio. I've been a political consultant and advisor to a vice president and to a presidential campaign. So I know how the highest level of politics works. I've been a professor in a humanist discipline. So I know how important culture and humanities are. I've been a journalist, so I understand what's happening with the media, and now I'm a tech CEO. So as a result of these four bases of experience, I do see how the policies that are being rolled out and have been since March of 2020 really don't map. And you guys know this, right? But it's so confusing. It's like, the data are in. Masks don't work. The data are in. Children are not at risk. The data are in. Sweden and Florida did as well as the most locked down countries. But they keep doing it, right? Well, as a political consultant, you learned that you can only find out what the intention is if you look at the outcome, right? So you have to reason backwards. Because when you're a political consultant or you're in touch with a message shop in a White House, you see that you start with the goal, right? And then the message shop has to work backward and create a story to get people to buy into and go along with the goal. So when you start flipping your reasoning around that way in your analysis, and you see that keeping children home from school boosts a $300 million ed tech industry that really didn't have any reason to exist before then, but the products had been developed, right? Well, then you think, oh, they're keeping kids home from school. And when you realize, and this is the mind-blowing insight, which I'm just going to share with you, even though it's the center of my new book, because time is short, the meta of the tech war on the human is that when you're in the tech space, when you're building tech products, you're always trying to get human beings to stop doing things in human space and to come onto your platform to do them instead. So, you know, if you're Amazon, people going to supermarkets and chatting with the greengrocer, that's your competitor, and they have a competitive advantage in the marketplace that is always going to win over you, right? If you're a dating site, you know, bars are your competitor, but human beings, smell and pheromones and the allure of physical bodies is a competitor to you, right? You could go on and on and on, but look at what happened to tech profits. Look at Meta, right? The metaverse that Facebook has just rolled out. If you mask people and force them to keep a distance from each other, you have wiped out the competitive advantage that humans have over machines. So this really is a war against the human. And the other insight that I'm gonna roll out right now, because this is another one, pardon me for, you know, venting slightly, but it is my professional experience that I'll, you know, have a really good idea and articulate it, and then male journalists who will repeat it without credit. So I'm just gonna say this for the camera, because male journalists are already repeating it without crediting me, doesn't matter. What is also happening, right, the boosters. I was deplatformed from Twitter, then I was deplatformed from YouTube. My book about how a pandemic in the 19th century in Britain led to state control of everything was canceled back in 2019. You know, I've been deplatformed and deplatformed. Every time I get it right. And what I got right before I was deplatformed permanently from Twitter was predicting boosters. And I predicted boosters from reading the Moderna website back in 2020, before anyone had ever heard of boosters. Because that is Moderna's business model. That is their competitive advantage against traditional vaccines. their appeal to investors on their website, and I understand this as a tech CEO, is traditional vaccines, you just give it to people once, and then they have permanent immunity. But our vaccines are like software that can be uploaded again and again and again. And so that's how I knew before Dr. Fauci told me that vaccines were going to lose their immunity powers and that people would need another booster, because that was what Moderna brought to market as its competitive advantage before anyone had ever had an mRNA vaccine. All right? So where am I going with this? When you have a situation that we have right now globally, and which seems so surreal, like why do you need a vaccine passport to get on a long distance train in France? You know, if the data are in and we know that vaccines don't affect transmission and infection, why did President Biden, you know, declare a mandate to force people to have these vaccines? And why can I not go into a restaurant? This farcical thing, I told my mom, I was with some wonderful people of you yesterday in New York. Thank you, Kat, for organizing it, and everyone in the city. I'm unvaccinated. I think a lot of us were unvaccinated. We couldn't find a bathroom because we couldn't go indoors. So it was like literally like before the Civil Rights Act of 1964 in New York, we could not walk inside. So why is there a two-tier society being created around the world right now? I will tell you why. Because if you can create a two-tier society in which all of the good things that belong to human beings are behind a paywall, that's how tech development works. You put a paywall in front of dinner parties. You put a paywall in front of bars and restaurants. You put a paywall in front of going to church or keeping your job or getting on a train. And then what is your credit card? It is your body. And then what are the subscription payments? They are the repeat boosters forever. And that's the tech model. So that's what they're doing, and that's why it's a war against the human. And when you see this, a lot of other mysteries fall into place, and I know I have limited time, and I want to get to what we can do, but just one note, because this really keeps me up at night. Kids, why are they targeting kids? Why are they masking kids? I'm not going to name names, but there are children that I love, and I know children, and I see the change in children. Human beings may need to see millions of faces in order to learn how to have human expressions. Children are losing their ability to express, let alone to use speech well. And every educational institution that's complicit in this is gonna, you know, face their maker someday. Like, there's divine justice for those people. But children are becoming, like, children come into the world charming, right? They are fascinated by faces, they're fascinated by speech, they're learning how to touch and engage and be human primates, primate humans. No longer, right? The masking is a massive experiment, apart from being child abuse, but it's an experiment that is leading humans to be charmless and not entities of speech and expression, let alone what it's doing to physical touch between children and human beings. So these kids are going to turn into adults for whom other humans are not that interesting, but Zoom is interesting, and Meta is interesting, and the little characters you create with emojis are more interesting because people will have limited facial expressions and impaired speech. So I know that these are traumatic subjects. I have limited time. I want to go now to what we can do, what we have to do. First of all, this is a hard one, but you really have to realize this is a war, and this is the war of our lifetime. And I'm going to share what my husband tells me. Often I wake up and say, this is too awful. I can't do it. I'm exhausted. I can't go on. Why haven't we won yet? They keep coming at us. And he points out that most wars last 4 to 8 years, and that the Revolutionary War lasted for years, and war is not a battle. you know, and that I have to like snap out of that mind space of, I can win this one, like I win a debate online, you know. No, we're in this for years. And that should inform our strategy. The other thing, and it has to inform our emotions as well. The other thing I want to say is that we are really blessed in the United States with something that other countries don't have, and that is our state system versus the federal system. Our founders were so wise, because what's happening right now is that the federal government is the mechanism for the tyranny. I don't need to spell that out. I voted for him. Whatever. We're beyond partisanship now, as Kat so wisely said. But it's at the state level that we can effectively fight for freedom. And so that's why my platform, Daily Clout, it exists to teach people how to use democracy. It is a digital way to lobby, especially important if we're kept from being in town halls or in protests. And, pardon me, it also, we have a lawyer, and we help people draft their own legislation and pass their own legislation. So, thank you. This has never existed, but thank you. Thank you. This has never existed before, certainly not in the last 150 years, but it's been incredibly powerful. There's a reason that it's not just me, it's not just Daily Clout, but it's been effective. 27 states now, as you may have noticed, have passed anti-vaccine passport laws. Well, that took lobbying. That took hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people sending our model bills. Other groups were also organizing to their legislators. It took people showing that this was an issue that would cost people their seats, okay? Because what you have to know is all the money that flows into politics can't buy an election. It can buy awareness, right? But it's people actually going to the polls they haven't been able to buy yet. So when people show that they can draft their own bills and they can become their own lobbyists, it really shifts the chessboard. So you've seen headwinds, you've seen a change. This used to be a marginal, very, very marginal, easily dismissed discussion. Now, in Virginia, we were very active shining a light on the health freedom voters, the moms and dads worried about kids in school, and I believe the health freedom voters and the moms and dads flipped that election. And I think I think you can see messaging from opponents of medical tyranny. I'm not gonna get all partisan. We're beyond that, as I keep saying, but they've seen that this is the issue for 2024, as we've been trying to show them, and 2022. So what I wanna say to you guys in the health freedom movement is you have an incredible gift, which is you are a kind of a sleeping giant voting block. Respectfully, I don't think you're very well organized right now as a sleeping giant voting block. I do want to talk about that if you want me to, or we can do it another time. But, well, okay. But on a positive note, there really are millions of you out there. As Kat said, it's my experience too, people from all walks of life are joining you, you know, as these medical imperialism, as I call it, cracks down on us. So I think it's incredibly urgent for you guys to organize effectively as a voting block and be trained to kind of speak effectively, manifest effectively on a national level, and then this can be a model globally, as a voting block. And when you see groups like the AARP does this, civil rights movement did it, LGBTQ rights activists did it, you know, when people really organize and show their power as a voting block, you do get change, even if vast vested interests are opposed to you. So I guess what I want to say is we have to fight this fight at the state level. We have to keep fighting at the state level. The way the states go, that's the way the country will go. But absolutely, when there's action at the state level and change in the media, it affects the consciousness of judges. And you've seen some very important decisions recently, the Fifth Circuit decision in Louisiana, and the subsequent decision to stay the mandates. That wouldn't have happened 6 months ago. And it happened because of a change in the climate that wasn't organic, because all the propaganda is going the other way in the media. It's a change in the climate brought about by a lot of incredibly hard workers, many of them here tonight, others across the country, who were targeting the voting process and the media. Let me quickly say, I guess, two things. I was told I would be given a note of time. How am I doing for time? So this is one of the things I want to talk about. Never mind. Yeah, so let me know how much time I have. Guys? Okay. Pardon me. Your activism should be aimed at the state level. I think that I want to gently tell you that signing petitions doesn't do anything. Protests, it's gesturally important, but they don't create lasting change if there are not other things at a protest. One of the things I had hoped to see at the protest I spoke at yesterday was a voting registration booth, right? That's something you need to have at every single gathering, right? Feel free to cheer. You have things as a movement that are so valuable in the political process that, again, I think you may be unaware of. 5 minutes, thank you. One of this is lists. It is gold, it is political gold to have a list of names and zip codes. Politicians pay a lot of money for that. You have big, big national health freedom groups. I'm not gonna name any names, there are a lot of them. They're really good at what they do. They have all these lists. Because they're 501c3s, they can't lobby, but other people can lobby. So every time you guys get together, you should try to expand the list, or digitally expand the list and keep it, right? And you know, keep it in a central digital place. We can house it for you if you want. You can't enlist an organization that's a C3, right? That's illegal. But you need to keep that list, you need to protect it, you need to make sure everyone on it really is who they say they are, because otherwise it can be dismissed. And then you guys need to vote in the midterms, right? It almost doesn't matter who you vote for. The midterms and the presidential election, the fact that you vote is public. You may not know that. And only 18% of people vote in midterms, right? So you have an incredible opportunity to show all the elected officials, and if you can get this number by having people photograph the fact that they voted in the midterms, excuse me, and you can say the health freedom community, 60% of them vote in the midterms, right? You will be unstoppable politically. I want to quickly talk about a couple of other hurdles, and forgive me, life is short, we're in war, I have to be honest with you. The health freedom community, from my humble experience, is somewhat traumatized in a way that's not helpful right now. I'm kind of asking you to snap out of it, or do whatever you need to do to snap out of it, and here's what I mean. I keep hearing from the health freedom community, oh, we're silenced, the media won't cover us, you know, we get deplatformed. That is true. The minute I affiliated with you guys, I got deplatformed, lost my career, lost my status, used to be a darling of the media, no longer. You know, it's fine. I'm standing on the right side of history. I know you're telling the truth. However, we're in a time, I've also had the experience of saying to the health freedom community, I have a site that reaches almost 250,000 people every time I post something. Send me your videos. Send me your blogs. Send me, you know, turn on your phone for 3 minutes at your rally or at this event or this video or whatever. It is like pulling teeth, respectfully. It's exhausting. Either it doesn't happen, people don't do it, you know, they do it but don't follow basic instructions about, like, who are the speakers? What are their names? They're simple things to make content like that usable for journalists, producers, editors. And for whatever reason that I think is cultural, you guys assume there's, not you guys, many people in the health freedom movement assume there's no point in just producing video that is identifiable, that has a date on it, and a few bullet points saying what it is, who are the speakers, so that people can verify. You know, did this happen? We're in a time of so much fake news. A producer has to say, like, who is this person? Are they real? Are they really in the New Hampshire courthouse? You know, I've been pranked. I mean, I don't want to go into it. It was a porn star, but, right? I mean, this is so easy, right? And I have had the experience of doing trainings, teaching communities how to do this, and then not seeing any change. So I guess I'm asking you to please, it's so beautiful here in 1968. I love it. You know, I want to be here forever, but you kind of have to snap out of it sometimes, right? And that means check the time, name the thing, get back to the person, keep the media lists. You're in a time when people are losing faith in legacy media. You know, non-mainstream media is expanding. We grew 1,200% in the last 6 months, right? You know, Bannon is the number one podcast. He covers this stuff. You know, Fox, which I never thought I'd say is a good idea to watch. They're the number one news source, right? So, you know, and Substack, blogs, exploding. People want to know what you know. Just make it easy for them to find you and I can give you a training. Be clear, bullet points, you know, name yourselves, right? Like, be public. I mean, someone has to be public or there's no movement to cover. And you don't all have to be public, but you have to task some people showing up and being answerable, you know, if a journalist calls you. Because otherwise, it's like the Occupy movement. It's impossible to cover. It came and went because no one would take responsibility for speaking for it. So just, you don't have to speak for everyone. Speak for yourself. You know, people are hungry to have your insights. Okay, create a voting block. Partnerships. I think that there are, as Kat said, I think there are a lot of natural constituencies for you guys to affiliate with right now. And I've given this advice to other groups. First responders and religious leaders, they are dying to create an affiliation, a voting bloc, a single issue voting bloc against mandates. I don't really see that much strategic partnering going on, and I highly recommend it. Call yourself a thing that is the meta thing, and then reach out to the Catholic Church, reach out to the Hasidim, reach out to the truckers, reach out to the nurses, reach out to the dissident teachers. You don't have to agree on everything. You just have to agree on one piece of legislation. I can give you that model legislation. And you can pass it and pass it and pass it because of the numbers of your affiliations. You don't have to ever see them again after this, right? If there are things you really don't agree with. But it, you're not losing your identity by creating strategic alliances. I think I've covered some of the main points. And I guess I just want to conclude by saying it's really an honor to stand with you on the right side of history. Super exhausting as well. And so be aware that leaders burn out as well. You know, your own leaders probably burn out as well. I'm super tired. And so anything you can do to treat the people who are out front as human beings and just like acknowledge them, give them a glass of water, thank them, see if they need someone to look after their dog, you know, if they're traveling around the country, just don't objectify people who just step into the role of seeming to have a lot of power and resources. Because we're all scared, we're all tired, and we all need community. I just want to share that. Thank you. And then I'll just conclude by saying, pardon me, I do think, you know, in addition to the political plane that I've been speaking about, there is a spiritual battle going on. It's the only thing I can understand. The nature of this evil is so intelligent. It's almost beyond a human intelligence. So I really do believe that we're facing, I didn't used to believe in satanic forces. You know, I'm Jewish, we don't have a very well-developed or thoroughly developed ideology or cosmology of satanic forces. But I'm kind of believing that there's God these days because the satanic forces arrayed against God are so complex, you know? So there's gotta be, it's like, they gotta be over the target somehow. So I do think that, you know, we're called to be brave on a spiritual plane and not just a material plane. And I'm scared when I see people I used to work with and love and respect be so cowardly and given to evil so quickly and easily without a fight. And I do believe there is divine, you know, order eventually, But I think we showed up on this planet at this time because we all have a role to play in remembering what it means to be human, remembering community, and carrying the light through this dark age to a new rebirth, hopefully. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Do I take questions now?
Yes.
Yes? So I'm told I have a little bit of time to take questions. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That'll be illegal in 6 months if we don't mobilize. Does anyone want to say anything, raise an issue, ask a question? Yeah. Thank you.
So the vote counting, the machines, the elections, they're all rigged. How are we going to get anywhere with elections?
Yeah, like, I can answer that. So I was an advisor in 2000 when it came down to like a few thousand votes, and there was arguing over the counting of the votes. And more recently, you know, I don't like it as an American, like I didn't vote for Trump, right? But as an American, CNN should not be telling me that claims that their voting problems are baseless till every single vote has been examined, right? And that was not okay. So there is clearly, Mark Crispin Miller, who's here with us tonight, is one of the great pioneers in this area. He wrote a book way ahead of the curve about vote tampering and vote exploitation. You should talk to him about this. But the bottom line, as I understand it, is that they can mess with the vote, but not if there's a massive margin. And the other thing is they can mess a lot more easily with a vote at a federal level in a national election than at a state house level. And at a state house level, you guys really, like, it takes 50 or 100 people to pass a bill. I was in New Hampshire when HB 255, banning vaccine mandates in New Hampshire, was being debated, and it literally made a difference that we helped a single expert get there to testify. And it made a difference that we were there filming and doing this to the legislators sitting in the front, right? Because they knew, usually this stuff happens in darkness. So at a state house level, like, don't worry, like, the federal will take care of itself. But if you guys are so strong at the state level, you're going to bear all ahead of you, because this is what's happening. Biden is losing political capital. It's not a partisan observation. And it means, and this is how politics works, it means that Democrats are peeling away from supporting these super unpopular mandates because they want to survive after the Biden administration may be no more. So you need to show your strength at the state house level and also count the vote, right? Be vote observers. There's no reason not to. Photograph your vote. It may be illegal in some states, but you can leak it to supportive journalists, without your name. There are many ways to keep the voting process under scrutiny, and I encourage you to ask Mark Miller about additional ways. But I do know absolutely that if you're active enough at the state level, it's almost impossible for them to mess up the federal election completely. Yes.
New York State's voting system is Dominion, and in addition to that, I recently learned that the DNC and RNC are private membership associations, which protect them from being sued. That's how Bernie couldn't sue the DNC after Hillary stole the election from him. So what kind of thoughts do you have on how we can fight against that?
I mean, I just think you have to be in a mindset of going around the DNC and the RNC and make them irrelevant. Where I really concur with Kat that we're in a time where partisanship increasingly doesn't matter, because it's no longer left versus right. If you know what's going on, it's a few tyrants and kind of everyone else. So if you form affiliations with interest groups across the political spectrum on these issues, you're draining the power of the DNC and the RNC. And also, if you raise money, right? And you give money to candidates who share your views, even if they're outside candidates, they don't need the DNC and the RNC, right? Those gatekeepers can't, look what happened with Trump. You know, the gatekeepers didn't want a populist guy that they couldn't control. I don't like him, but I respect that he mobilized outsiders to totally go around the RNC, and you can do that as well. But again, I'll answer all these questions, but this is kind of a teachable moment, because I want to encourage you to look at where your attention goes, right? And I'm not blaming anyone, and you have good questions, but your attention, for a lot of good reasons, goes to the structures keeping you from being powerful. And what I want you to also be thinking about is, who in this room wants to run for city council? Who in this room wants to run to represent this area in Columbia County? You know, how do we get our guys and girls, you know, you have a sympathetic sheriff, a constitutional sheriff, how do we support that person so that he is not in danger of not being elected? I don't know enough about him, but, you know, if that's a good candidate, you have so much power in this room. And I want you to look at yourselves and think, okay, who's going to run? And how do we raise money for that person? How do we mobilize for that person? It is not difficult. And, you know, I can put you in touch with people who can teach you how to run. But that's what I want you to be thinking about. How do you own, you know, New York State if you're not going to yet own the United States of America? And you can do it. Any other questions? I didn't mean to be a downer on the questions, but yeah. Comments? Do we all, we've got it all figured out? Yes, please.
I've been recently looking a lot into the work of Anna Von Wright and the movement to basically rebuild the original structure of this country and have the corporate entities that are running everything become irrelevant because we're creating that structure. And I'm wondering how much you know about that and if you can speak to that.
Sure. Well, that's a wonderful question. I don't know about that particular writer, but, you know, we definitely do need to create alternative structures. I don't agree with, and I also come from the left, I don't agree with tearing down institutions in order to rebuild them, because our founders' vision was quite beautiful, even if history didn't live up to their ideal for very much of our history. However, for example, Columbia County is really well positioned, or wherever you are, Dutchess County, New York City, very well positioned to create, and it's someone else's idea, but we want to do it at Daily Clout, a green book, right? Where basically, you know, that's where we're at. And with all honor and respect to the history of the original green book, where we support restaurants and hotels and businesses that do not discriminate against people based on their medical status. And we boycott businesses and institutions that do discriminate. So economic boycotts are very, very effective. And there are a lot of women leaders in this room. Women spend 70 cents of every consumer dollar. And when women boycott things, it really makes a difference. And I grew up with the bringing down of apartheid, and it was through economic boycotts. The LGBTQ community has used economic boycotts really well, state by state, with the travel dollar. And if we launch a statewide economic boycott, you can send me your list of businesses that do and don't discriminate, and I will keep that list and make it public and send it out to our 250,000 readers, you know, or you can do it yourselves on your own website. You have to be careful, because you don't want to say directly that they're breaking the law by not discriminating, but you want to send so much business to the good guys, and you also want to call the corporate offices and tell them when you're saying, I'm never going to stay at a Hyatt Place again because you're making staff wear masks, or you say nonsense about vaccination, tell them. Just call the corporate offices. It makes a huge difference. They count every phone call as representing 10,000 consumers. And if you do it in an organized way, you know, get together, you know, once a month here, have cookies, get on your phones, call the corporate offices, and tell them that you're moving your money. You know, it's that simple, and it's going to make a difference.
about the timekeeper's watch book.
Oh God, all right. Thank you all so much. My time is up. Thank you. I know you'll save this country. Thank you.
Naomi, thank you.